come with me to Matthew chapter 13. We're nearly at the end of this chapter. So Matthew chapter 13, and we've looked in Matthew 13 at seven parables. There is actually one to come. It sort of sneaks in at the end and doesn't actually just declare itself to be a parable, but it is parabolic. But tonight we need to think about, why does Jesus teach in parables? As we've gone through chapter 13, we've actually dodged a few passages. And tonight we're thinking about, why does Jesus actually use this method to teach? And if you look at chapter 13, verse 10, we read, "And the disciples came and said to him, 'Why do you speak to them in parables?'" Now, just a few reminders. I'm sorry if you've heard this many times before, but people come and go on Wednesdays, and just to bring us all up to speed. If you remember, Matthew is writing to Jews. That's his audience. His theme as he writes to Jews is the kingdom of heaven. The kingdom of heaven is where God reigns, where God is in charge, if I can put it like that, where his will is done. And the Jews are waiting for the day when God's reign would break in upon the earth, because as they looked at the earth, there was, as we're thinking on Sunday, with sin and death, these two great giants marauding over the earth, they're longing for the day when the reign of God would break in. And they were expecting God's reign, when it broke in, to be something that was dramatic, unmistakable, cosmic in its proportions. It would be sudden. And if we think of this old age, as the old age, it's the curse, there's sin, there's death, there's the victory of the wicked and all those sorts of things. The kingdom of heaven would come and then would begin this new age, and a glorious new age, the golden age. So it would happen very dramatically. It would be crash, bang, wallop. The old age of the curse of this wretched world and all that it means would go, and the new age would come. That's what they were expecting. Because as they read the Old Testament, they looked at this kaleidoscope of images, and the Old Testament teaches those things, but they didn't understand it rightly. There is, of course, ultimately, the kingdom when it comes in all its fullness. It is the end of the old age and the consummation of all things. But they read those Old Testament passages selectively, and that's why the eighth parable actually talks about that. Because that's not how the kingdom comes, and we've done this loads of times. That's the old age. The kingdom of heaven comes, the new age begins. But the two ages, they overlap. So, for a time, the old age carries on, and the new age begins. It's called, the theologians call it, the already but not yet. The kingdom of God has already come, but it's not yet come in all its fullness. It's been inaugurated, it's begun, but it's not yet been consummated. Okay? The two ages overlap, and as we've seen, gone through a series, to the Jewish mind, that is really shocking. That is just something they were not anticipating, expecting, ever thinking about. Which is why they therefore have a problem. Because if this is Messiah, Jesus of Nazareth, and if the kingdom of heaven has arrived, their question is, well, where is it? We can't see it. Where is this great golden age? And therefore, the whole of Matthew's gospel is resolving that tension between expectation and fulfillment. And particularly as we come to Matthew 13, we have these parables which are resolving this tension between what they expect and how it's to be fulfilled. And parables which explore the meaning and the dimensions of the coming of the kingdom of heaven. And we've seen that, lots of examples of that, of how it does come. It comes quietly, secretly, comes and it's resisted and all sorts of things as we've gone through the parables. But of course, the whole thing is that why does Jesus deal with this, deal with the coming of the kingdom in terms of parables? Why does he use parables to teach it? Because if you think about it, the Jews need clarity about the coming of the kingdom. Why not give them clarity? If the Jews need explanations as to how the kingdom comes, why not give them clear explanations as to how it comes? Why hide the explanation of the coming of the kingdom behind parables? I mean, just for a moment, Matthew 13, we read chapter verse 1, on the same day Jesus went out of the house and sat by the sea, and great multitudes were gathered together to him, so that he got into a boat and sat, and the whole multitude stood on the shore. Now, just for a moment, you're standing on the shore with this huge crowd. There's Jesus in a boat. He's teaching you from a boat, and he's going to talk to you about the kingdom of heaven. All right, just for a moment, you're just standing there on the shore. Okay, he's going to tell you about the kingdom of heaven. What does he say? He says, "Behold, a sower went out to sow. And as he sowed, some seed fell by the wayside, and the birds came and devoured them. Some fell on stony places where they did not have much earth, and they immediately sprang up because they had no depth of earth. But when the sun was up, they were scorched, and because they had no root, they withered away. And some fell among thorns, and the thorns sprang up and choked them. But others fell on good ground and yielded a crop, some a hundredfold, some 60, some 30. He who has ears to hear, let him hear." Well, if you're on the shore and Jesus just says that to you, what have you heard? I mean, you just heard a bit of story, haven't you, about seeds and ground? You heard a story about a sower who goes out and sows seed on four different soils. I mean, what on earth has that got to do about anything? You're just standing there. You're listening to that. Here's the great Jesus of Nazareth. There's a vast crowd. That's what he tells you. I mean, who can make sense of that? Do you see? And not only that, we're told, verse 2, there's the whole multitude still on the shore, this great crowd. So there's this huge crowd that's following Jesus. Everyone is falling over themselves to get close to him. That's why he has to go into a boat. They're all eating out of his hand. If ever there was a time to explain how the kingdom of heaven comes, if ever there was a time to announce that the kingdom of heaven is here and that he, the king, is taking over, well, then surely it's now. It's like the ball is on the penalty spot, isn't it? But instead of making things obvious and clear and understandable, Jesus makes it obscure. He speaks to them in riddles. "Behold, a sower went out to sow." It's a riddle, isn't it? The only clue there's something going on here is when he says, "He who has ears, let him hear." If he'd not said that, you wouldn't have picked up anything. It was a story about, what did you hear today? Oh, it was a story about soils and seed. There's a cue in there that listen to what's really going on. But otherwise, you wouldn't pick anything up, would you? Which is why the disciples are perplexed. That's why they say to him, verse 10, "Why do you speak to them in parables? It makes no sense at all." So do you see the issue we're dealing with? The Jews don't understand how the kingdom of heaven is coming. So Jesus explains it in a way that they don't understand. He tells them of how it comes. He does it by telling them riddles. The disciples say, "What's going on?" So what is going on? When the disciples say, "Jesus, why do you speak to them in parables?" It's because the parable was well understood at the time. It's not like Jesus is sort of introducing something new. Lots of scribes and rabbis talked to their disciples in parables. It was a way of teaching. So parables are an understood teaching method. It was used extensively. And what a parable does, and what Jesus is doing here, is that he places a short story side by side with the spiritual truth. So in this case, it's a truth about the kingdom of heaven. So it's a short story side by side with a spiritual truth, a truth about the kingdom of heaven. So that if you understand the story, if you get the point of the story, it throws light onto the spiritual truth, onto the kingdom of heaven. The one throws light on the other. That's why Jesus says, "He who has ears to hear, let him hear." Now, when you come to parables, the story is drawn from everyday life. So they aren't sort of crazy, sort of fairy tale stories. They're from everyday life. And the stories are easy to remember. I mean, if you heard the parable of the sower twice, you could probably go and tell everyone you met, couldn't you? It's not a difficult story to remember. They're easy to remember. So they're easy to remember, stories drawn from everyday life. But, and this is the point, the spiritual truth which they illustrate is not easy to see. That's the point. The spiritual truth is not straightforward. It's cryptic. There's something of a riddle. There's a hidden element in it all. If you like, there's a secret locked up inside the parable, and that secret is frequently surprising. It's a bit like an iceberg. How much of an iceberg is above the surface? Anyone know? I'm looking for information. I have no idea how much.
It's less than a third.
Okay, so there's our ocean, all right? The thing is, it's even bigger than that, isn't it? There's your iceberg.
It's about a
tenth. Okay, so there's your massive, that is the parable. That's the bit above the surface. That's the bit that you hear. This, underneath, is the spiritual truth, okay? That's what a parable's on about. So everyone can hear that bit, but this bit is hidden. It's below the surface. Now, the clue is, when Jesus says, "He who has ears to hear, let him hear," you therefore have a sense, actually, there's more going on here. You know, if you see an iceberg, you know there's more under the surface. You don't know quite where it is. So you know there's something going on. And that's really what a parable is. So it's easy to remember a story that contains inside it a secret about the kingdom. So parables need to be unlocked if you do understand them. Okay? But we still come back to the disciples' question, why do you speak to them in parables? Why speak to the people in riddles? Why, when you've got a great big crowd, do you turn them away because they think they have no idea what Jesus is talking about? Why not make it obvious? Why can't Jesus make things clearer? And the disciples came and said to him, "Why do you speak to them in parables?" He answered and said to them, "Because," so here's the explanation of why he speaks in parables, "it has been given to you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been given." So parables draw a line. Jesus identifies two groups, doesn't he? He says, "to you, but to them." So the parable is drawing a line. It's separating the you from the them. If you like, when it comes to a parable, there are insiders who are in on the secret, and there are outsiders who haven't a clue what's going on. There are the initiated, which are the disciples. Then there are the uninitiated, which is everyone else. So the parable draws a line. At the end of the parable on the sower, the crowd walk away thinking, what was all that about? But the disciples, those who want to follow Jesus, what do? They gather round, don't they? And they ask questions. That's why they're here. They're asking him questions. That's why he says, "Therefore hear the parable of the sower" in verse 18 and explains what it means to them. If you like, the disciples are in on the secret, because it has been given to you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven. Now, Jesus here talks about mysteries. Anyone know what a mystery is? I mean, in Bible terms.
Something hitherto unrevealed.
Yes.
Something yet to be revealed.
So something that up until now has not been revealed, something that's been in the mind of God, but now is revealed. So if it's a mystery, and there's something that's been hidden in the mind of God, how can you discover what that mystery is? Is any one way of discovering it? How do you discover what the mystery is? God has got to reveal it, hasn't he? If there's something that's hidden in God's mind, there's no way you can find out what it is, can you? Unless God himself chooses to reveal it. The only way to get hold of this mystery is for God to show you. You can't discover it any other way. So, it has been given to you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven. God is revealing his truth, that which has been hidden in his mind. Now he's making it known. He's revealing that truth to his disciples. But he keeps everyone else in the dark. Doesn't reveal it to everyone. He just reveals it to his disciples. But to them, it has not been given. So Jesus is speaking in parables. He's speaking in riddles precisely because he wants to draw a line. He wants to draw a line between insiders and outsiders. He wants to draw a line between his disciples and everyone else. But parables don't just draw a line. They actually do more than that. If a parable divides you into two groups, not only do they divide you, but they exaggerate the difference between you. If you like, they polarize you. So verse 12. For whoever has, to him more will be given, and he will have abundance. But whoever does not have, even what he has will be taken away from him. So parables separate people. If you really want to know about the kingdom, and you come to Jesus and you ask questions and you want to find out what it is about because you want to follow the king, you want to serve the king, you love the king, then the parable will become for you an open door. And you'll go through that door and you'll go further in. Things will become clearer to you. You will understand even more. For whoever has... Okay, this is the disciple who comes to Jesus and says, tell me, tell me, tell me. To him, more will be given. The door will be opened. And as he goes through that door, he will have abundance. The one door leads into a huge landscape of revelation through the parable. Okay? But if, like most of the crowd, you're not that bothered about this, you know, you've come along for the ride, you've heard a lot about Jesus of Nazareth, you're hoping to see a miracle, you've heard lots of things about him, maybe he'll do something and you can say, I was there, and he has some interesting things to say, and if you come along for the ride, but actually the bottom line is you don't want to follow him as king, you're not going to serve him, then the parable becomes for you a dead end. It becomes a brick wall. All you remember is the story. So that day, you're on the shore, he told you the story, that's all you saw. That was the end of it. You heard the story, it was the end of the story. Nothing further. But whoever does not have, even what he has, will be taken away from him. Even perhaps the little bit of understanding that you might have had, by the end of it all, you'd have walked away and think, oh, I don't know what it's all about. It makes no sense to me at all. It was just a funny little story that was told by this teacher. So you see how parables operate. It's very subtle, really, isn't it? It's very, very clever. They operate, they're a sieve, they're a filter, they're filtering people out between those who really are interested in knowing the king and being part of his kingdom and serving him and loving him and following him. They go one way and they go higher up, further in. They understand more and more about the kingdom and what it means to love and follow the king, because that's what they want. And for those who just come along for the ride because they're just interested to see what goes on, they don't see anything. They just hear the story. And it actually pushes them in the other direction. They just walk away and saying, I don't know what all that was about. I'm back again. So they're separating people. But actually, I think that still begs the question, doesn't it? Why does he speak to them in parables? I mean, is it fair that Jesus is pushing some people away? And, okay, say it's great he's encouraging other people on, but why push some people away? Why doesn't he try to persuade the crowd? Why is he trying to bring them all over to his way of thinking? Why not make it clearer to them instead of harder for them? If he makes it clearer to them, maybe then more of them will follow him. Why make it harder? Why is Jesus hiding things? And Jesus gives the answer, verse 13. Therefore I speak to them in parables, because seeing they do not see, and hearing they do not hear, nor do they understand. What Jesus is saying is this. He's saying that he knows that most of those in the crowd, in their heart of hearts, they're not really bothered about Jesus. So take the parable of the sower. Okay, let's just try and work through this together. So throw out some answers. Okay, verse 4, as he sowed, some seed fell by the wayside, and the birds came and devoured them. And then Jesus gives the explanation in verse 19, when anyone hears the word of the kingdom and does not understand it, then the wicked one comes and snatches it away. Snatches away what was sown in his heart. This is he who received the seed by the wayside. I'll explain that one very briefly. There are some people who have no interest in Jesus at all. Okay, they're just not bothered about him. So they never even remember what he says. He's so unimportant to them that nothing sticks. Now, obviously, Satan comes and snatches it away, but he snatches it away because it's never stuck to them. They're just not interested. Jesus doesn't matter to them. And then you have some seed fell on stony places where they did not have much earth, and they immediately sprang up because they had no depth of earth. But when the sun was up, they were scorched, and because they had no root, they withered away. And then Jesus' explanation is, but he received the seed on stony places. This is he receives the word and immediately receives it with joy. Yet he has no root in himself, but endures only for a while. For when tribulation or persecution arises because of the word, immediately he stumbles. Okay, what about these people? What's their attitude to Jesus? What's their attitude to the king? Why is it that Jesus knows, actually, the bottom line is that people aren't really serious about me?
They're in it for themselves.
They're in it for themselves, yeah. So throw out our answers. That's completely right, and we can throw out other ones. Yeah, so this is a king. As long as it's easy to follow this king, they'll go along with him. As soon as this king starts messing up their lives, okay, they have trouble for following this king. They don't want to know. Okay, so you know, the bottom line is these people, they're quite attracted to this king. As long as this king makes life easy for them. As long as, you know, they get a good return on their investment, if you like. They invest their lives in the king. It goes well with them, but as soon as it mucks up their life, they don't want to know. Or take verse 7, some seed fell among thorns, and the thorns sprang up and choked them. And then verse 22, now he who received the seed among the thorns is he who hears the word, and the cares of this world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and he becomes unfruitful. So what about these people? But you could say that was true of the first one, first group.
But in a deeper way, in a much more dangerous way.
Okay. Well, these people, I'm not disagreeing with you, I'm just trying to sort of push it a bit. These people, they receive the word, don't they, initially? What is it about these people? It shows they're never ultimately serious about the king.
Well, things end up being more of a priority.
That's right. So, anyone want to throw anything more on that, or say anything more on that? Mike? Sorry, go on, Mike.
They never do anything with it.
Never do anything with it, yeah?
Maybe they start forming their own doctrines, so they've got part of the word that they reform it.
Okay, so there's not a complete submission to the king.
The wheat was already there, so there may be things in their lives that they've allowed to continue but never fully dealt with.
Okay, so there are things which are in opposition to the king, which they never deal with. Jimmy, and then I'll go to you, Gavin. Yeah, Jimmy?
Idolatry,
go on.
The things in their life that they worship.
Which are bigger than the king. Yeah.
I think that when their circumstances get above them, then they're just trying to grab onto anything apart from the king.
Yes. Yeah. So there were these people, for these people, the king is never going to be everything to them. For a time, the king fits into their life, doesn't he? So he fits into their life. They look like professing Christians. They sound like Christians and all the rest of it. He fits into their life. But it's only ever for a time, because they've never fully surrendered to him. And because he only ever fits into their life, other things take over. Other things become more important to them than the king, which pushes him out of their life. And actually, if you look at the things that become more important to them, they're things that belong to this... I've rubbed it out now. They're things that belong to the old age. In other words, they're more at home in the old age than they are in the new age. They live by the values of the old age rather than following and obeying and serving the king. Okay? So, you can do that with the other parables as well. I'm just trying to illustrate the point. Here are these people, they're more at home in this world than they are under the rule of the king. The point is, Jesus knows this. He knows. He looks at the crowd, and if you can slice the crowd four ways, there are some in that crowd who are not even listening to what he's saying. He's so unimportant to them. They're just, you know, if ever you've preached, you see it. People are miles away. They're just not interested in what he's got to say. There are some there who are saying, this king, I like the sound of this king. This is good stuff. But as soon as this king starts to muck about with their lives and change the way they like to do things, he's out. There are some who are saying, well, I could fit this king in with my life. You know, it's a pretty good... There's room for him in my world. But it's still their world. And because it's their world, eventually he'll get pushed out of their life. But of course, there's another group who actually... The good ground here is they really do love the king and want to know the king and serve the king. So the point is this. Therefore, I speak to them in parables because seeing they do not see and hearing they do not hear, nor do they understand. There are three quarters of that crowd, or three out of the four soils, are people who ultimately, at the end of the day, don't want to know. They won't follow the king. At the end of the day, this kingdom language to them sounds extreme. This kingdom of God and all that it means seems unreal. And their hearts aren't open to the king. They don't really want to know. So what Jesus is doing, he's using the parables to sift them out. To remove them from the equation. That's why it's all about riddles and secrets and insiders and outsiders. I mean, we know this, don't we? I mean, at Amy and Park, we have secrets. I don't really quite like that. At Amy and Park, we have things which are part of the in crowd at Amy and Park, don't we? But if someone who from the outside came in and we made a particular joke about you, Ken, for example, all right? As if we would, we wouldn't. I mean, it's sort of, you know, house party stuff, Ken, you know, where things go on. If a visitor came in, they wouldn't have a clue what it was about, would they? But we'd all be laughing and smiling and enjoying it. Because we're part of the inside. There are certain things which work with us that don't work with outsiders. Every group has it. You will have it in your families. There are in-jokes in families, aren't there? Which outsiders haven't a clue what it means. So it's the same thing here. The parables are part of the separation. Okay. They sift people out. They hear the story, but don't understand what it's really all about. And says Jesus, the reason for this actually is a judgment. Look at verse 14. And in them the prophecy of Isaiah is fulfilled, which says, hearing you will hear and seeing... I'll say it again. Hearing you will hear and shall not understand, and seeing you will see and not perceive. For the hearts of this people have grown dull, their ears are hard of hearing, and their eyes they have closed, lest they should see with their eyes and hear with their ears, lest they should understand with their hearts and turn, so that I should heal them. So, this sifting people out, remember these are Jews, is a judgment upon the Jewish nation. It was true in Isaiah's day, it's now being true in Jesus' day. What Jesus is saying is this, hearing you will hear and shall not understand, seeing you will see and not perceive. Jesus has been going around, hasn't he? If you'd watched Jesus and listened to Jesus, and you were using your eyes and you were using your ears, why would it be obvious that the kingdom of God had come? Just watching. What things have been going on that makes it obvious that the kingdom of heaven is here? What sort of things will you have seen?
Change lives.
Change lives, yeah. And how big might that change be? Jill?
Miracles.
You've seen miracles, haven't you? What sort of miracles have you seen?
Testimony.
Sorry?
Testimony.
You've seen testimonies, but if you actually, what sort of miracles would you have witnessed? You've seen people raised from the dead, haven't you? Does that happen every day? Does that happen in this world? Do people rise from the dead in this world? Do they? Do they? They don't, do they? So, if people are being raised from the dead, doesn't it look like to you that God is taking over? That God is intervening, doesn't it? What other things have you seen? Go on, you've all seen them. You've seen them in the scripture. What other things have been going on? Sorry, go on. Why? Yep, so we've had the feeding of the 5,000. What else?
Blind to see.
What else?
Deaf
hear. The lame are walking. The lepers are cleansed. What else has been going on? What have you seen that really does, there's all those physical miracles. There's even raising the dead. What other sort of miracles have you seen? Okay, so prophecy has been revealed, yeah. But you're just using your ears and eyes at the moment. So maybe you haven't got into that. You're not that deep into things. You're just watching. Okay, yeah. So yeah, you've seen demons being cast out, haven't you? You've seen lives which have been under the control of evil spiritual entities. Nothing anyone could do about it. And Jesus only has to say the word and these evil spirits flee. So you know that evil, demonic things are running for their lives, running scared. So if you use your eyes and you use your ears and you're steeped in hundreds of years of Jewish teaching about the kingdom of heaven, the kingdom of heaven will mean the end of the curse, will mean death itself going into reverse, will mean the evil being driven back, you would see, wouldn't you? It would begin to dawn on you that surely the kingdom of heaven is breaking in. Surely God's reign is happening. Surely this man, Jesus of Nazareth, doesn't he look like Messiah? Doesn't he look like God taking charge if you used your eyes and if you used your ears? But the point is that people haven't responded, have they? What they've actually done, says verse 15, the hearts of this people have grown dull. They've hardened their hearts to what they've seen. They've seen it, but they haven't responded to it. They've actually put their fingers in their ears. They've actually closed their eyes. Because, as it says in verse 15, lest they should understand with their hearts and turn. Now, if the king has come and you turn, you're going to turn to the king, aren't you? But if I don't want to turn to the king, I like things the way they are, what do? I close my eyes, I put my fingers in my ears, I harden my heart. That's what they've been doing. They don't actually want to know. I've used this illustration before, and we've all done it. You walk down the street. You see someone you know. They're coming towards you, or maybe on the other side of the road. And you think, oh, no, not them. I don't want to get caught. So what do we do? What do you do? What do I do? What do we do? We cross it. So, but we might, yeah, okay, so we might cross over. So what actually are we doing? What are we pretending to do? We're avoiding them, that's right, but we're not.
We haven't seen.
Exactly, so we are avoiding them, but we pretend we haven't seen them, don't we? Has no one ever, have you done that? I've done that. We've all done it. Someone, the last person you want to see, so you pretend you haven't seen them. Right? We all do it. So here are these people. They've seen Jesus all right. They've seen that this doesn't happen. But the thing is, they don't want to get caught by Jesus. So if you don't want to get caught by Jesus, if you don't want the implications of his kingdom to come crashing into your world, what do? You pretend you haven't seen him. You pretend you haven't heard him. That's what they're doing. They're pretending they don't see. They're pretending they haven't heard. Because they've got hard hearts. We don't want to get caught by Jesus. In which case, therefore, says Jesus, if you pretend you can't see, if you pretend that you haven't heard, then through the parables, then you will, in fact, see nothing. And you will, in fact, hear nothing. Hearing, you will not hear, and shall not understand, and seeing, you will not see, and not perceive. If you don't want to hear when you can hear, then, says Jesus, through the parables, I will give you the deafness that you want. If you say you can't see when you can see, then through the parables, I will give you the blindness that you want. Because actually, you won't understand what's going on. You won't see, you won't hear. Okay? It happened in Isaiah's day, says Jesus, it's happening now. Does that make sense? Yeah? If you pretend you haven't seen, then what the parable does is mean that you're now blind. Because all you saw was a funny story. You didn't see anything. So in that sense, parables are moving walkways. When if you understand the parable, it'll speed you into the kingdom of heaven. You'll understand great truths. It'll all become clear to you. If you don't want to know, when you hear the parable, because you think, what's all that about? It speeds you in the other direction. So you might have started off like that. Here are some people who are sort of interested and quite, you know, want to know more about Jesus. Here are some people who are not so interested. But by the end of the parables, they're like that. Because one has drawn people right in to become disciples, and the others have pulled people right away. It's quite subtle, isn't it? They speed some to heaven, and others they speed to hell. Therefore, verse 16, we'll close with this. Blessed are your eyes, Jesus talking to his disciples now, blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. For assuredly I say to you, that many prophets and righteous men desired to see what you see, and did not see it, and to hear what you hear, and did not hear it. Says Jesus, what generations of godly believers would have longed to have looked into, he says to his disciples, you are now seeing and hearing. They longed for the day when the kingdom of heaven would come. Well, says Jesus, that's now been revealed to you. Let's close then by just two very brief things. Why do some hear and some do not? Well, there are two answers to those questions. The reason why some get it and some don't is human responsibility, isn't it? For the hearts of this people, verse 15, have grown dull, their ears are hard of hearing, and their eyes they have closed. They've done it deliberately, lest they should see with their eyes and hear with their ears, lest they should understand with their hearts and turn, so that I should heal them. The reason why some people don't get it is because they've hardened their hearts deliberately. They pretend they can't see when they can. They're happier with the old age than being part of the new age. They want to do things their way, not follow the king. And therefore they're fully responsible for their rejection of Christ. That's why the parable pushes them away, because their hearts are hard. They don't want to know. Well, it'll hurry you on your way then. But that's only half the story, isn't it? Because all our hearts are hard. So why is it some of us see and others don't see? And the second answer is God's grace. My heart is no less hard than... no less hard than these people here. And yet we see. Why do we see? Verse 11, because there's been given to you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been given. The reason we know is not because we're any less unbelieving, it's because God has opened our eyes, and God has opened our ears, and God has opened our hearts. That's why. Now, of course, you ask the question, why? Why does God open our hearts? Why is it that God has told us his secrets, but he's hidden those secrets from others? Why doesn't God open everyone's eyes? And the answer to that is Matthew 11 and verse 25. Why doesn't everyone see? Why has he only opened the eyes of some? And the answer is Matthew 11, verse 25. At that time, Jesus answered and said, I thank you, Father. He's actually responding here now to the rejection of him by Chorazin, Bethsaida, and Capernaum. I thank you, Father, Lord of heaven and earth, that you have hidden these things from the wise and the prudent and have revealed them to babes. Verse 26, even so, Father, for so it seemed good in your sight. Jesus looks at these three cities, Chorazin, Bethsaida, Capernaum. They shut their eyes. They stop their ears. They harden their hearts. And actually then God gave them over to that hardness. And when Jesus looks at the hardness of these places, he simply says, Father, you've hidden those things from them. And you revealed it to my disciples, to these children. Now, Father, why have you hidden it from them and revealed it to them? And Jesus' answer is, verse 26, even so, Father, for so it seemed good in your sight. When faced with the Father hardening some and opening the eyes of others, Jesus simply bows the knee and says, it seemed good to you. And he worships. So why is it that some of us, why is it that our eyes have been opened? It's simply because it pleased the Father to open our eyes. Why didn't he open the eyes of others? And all we can say is, even so, Father, for so it seems good in your sight. And therefore, Christian friends, as we come tonight, that must fill us with, we may fill you with all sorts of things. But look at what Jesus says. Blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. For surely I say to you that many prophets and righteous men desired to see what you see and did not see it, and to hear what you hear and did not hear it. Something very wonderful here, isn't it? God has revealed to us the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven. God has opened our eyes to see those things. The things which God has had hidden in his mind, he's come and told us his secrets. He's confided in us. He's shown us things that he's shown nobody else. He's revealed to us the mysteries of the kingdom. And of course, they're mysteries, they're plural. There's many more things he's yet to reveal to us. And he reveals them to us through his word. And of course, our response, therefore, should simply be to sit at his feet and to learn of him and say, Lord, tell me more. Lord, open my eyes wider. Lord, open my ears to your voice. Lord, save me, spare me ever from a dull heart. Give me a broken heart. Give me a heart that trembles at your word. Give me a heart that's open to your word so I can hear your voice and obey. And our response too should be to give ourselves therefore as much as possible to that word, shouldn't it? The things that Abraham longed to see, that David wanted to see, that Isaiah wanted to see, that Jeremiah wanted to see, that all those great men of the Old Testament, all those great heroes, all things they longed to see, God says, I've revealed it to you at Amien Park Chapel. You see further than they saw. I've revealed more to you than ever they knew. I've shown you the kingdom of heaven. So it must fill us with an extraordinary sense of privilege, mustn't it? And therefore, brothers and sisters, to give ourselves as much as possible to the word. Because it's a thing which is revealed. We mustn't hide behind and say, oh, well, you know, as long as I read my Bible, I'll be okay. Give myself as much as possible to the word being opened, explained, taught, discussed, shared. Because God will, you know, that open door that we go in through, on the other side is a huge expanse with all the mysteries of the kingdom. And God says, come further in, higher up. I've so much more to show you, so much more to tell you. And to give ourselves to God's word, to sit at Jesus' feet. For whoever has, to him more will be given, and he will have abundance.